pretty damn good football team.
That was not a grand experiment.
And by the way, Bruce said one thing I take issue with. Forget about it. I'm back to being clean shaven. I can't rely on Scotty Miller. Let him work his way up from dog food.
Yeah. All right, the Ira Kaufman podcast is on episode 2 of this week, featuring the king of Pasco County, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Uncle Ira, the beast of Big Storm Brewery. How are you, Sage?
Oh, man, I got a lot of energy for this podcast, gentlemen. I wolfed down a half a Reuben sandwich from Big Storm Brewery. It took me about 2.3 minutes. My wife said I inhaled it. Tells me to chew, Ira, chew. I thought she was talking to Cosmo. Lee, I don't know if you saw the picture, but we took a picture. Little Cosmo looking right to the camera, right into the camera.
You said you ate half of it, Ira. Did Cosmo swallow the other half?
Cosmo's lucky he gets kibble from me, Lee. That's all he's going to get. I can't waste outstanding Rubens on Cosmo. Let him work his way up from dog food. And in a year or two, we'll discuss it.
All right, Sage. Now, that food was delivered to you from Big Storm Brewery. They are also delivering beer from their and food from their Odessa tap rooms, their Clearwater tap rooms. Ira, I saw in that picture there, it appeared as if you got a 4-pack of Tropic Pressure Florida Ale. So I'm sure that will take you through the night tonight as we record this on Wednesday evening. And BigStormBrewery.com is where you can order online, and they'll deliver it to your house. You can pick it up at the tap room. And, of course, their beers are across the Tampa Bay area. You can find them at the Storm Tracker on our website, JoeBucksFan.com, or at BigStormBrewery.com. And Sage, let me introduce, that was the voice of Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks Fan. I'm Steve Isbitz. And of course, Ira, our regular people here, they know who we are. Your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford. It's incredible what's going on there. No payments until the summer. Tremendous offers from Ford. 0% interest for 84 months on new vehicles. 3 months of payments are made by Ford. 3 months they're deferring. Gosh, you can go in there, walk out with a vehicle, and not have to make a payment for 6 months until this world mess gets straightened out. General Manager Sean Sullivan is our good friend, and he is right there at Bill Curry Ford to help anybody personally who needs it, a one-on-one appointment if you want it. Big, nice, clean showroom. BillCurryFord.com is the website. And Ira, still driving around to the river in that beautiful 2020 Ford Escape?
Well, I don't want you telling everybody so they can bump me off the road over there, Steve, but I am. The Ford Escape is fantastic. So easy to process all the functions, and there's a lot of them. There's a lot of stuff that comes standard in this Ford. Cherry Red 2020, Steve, Cherry Red. By the way, speaking of Big Storm, let's not go one step further without noting that I gave the guy a nice healthy tip when he came to my door, Steve. Nice and healthy.
Now, today, a lot of fans may not realize this was a busy day in the world of the Bucks because Bruce Arians held a conference call news conference with the locals only, meaning guys like us and some of the other people that people read and listen to around town. And we got to hit them with a bunch of questions. And it was not on Buccaneers.com like many other news conferences that we see and fans get to listen to. So because it's not out there, I have got it edited down, and fans are going to get to listen to it. We'll take a little break in the middle of the podcast. They can hear all of Bruce Arians, and so I'm glad we can bring that to everybody to listen. So, Sage, running backs was one thing that Bruce Arians talked about today, and he made it very clear, Ira, that Ronald Jones is not a third down back, that he's looking for somebody to compete with Dare Ogunbowale to play on third down, and he's looking for a guy who can catch the ball, not just in the screen game. He praised Jones in the screen game, but really line up as a receiver and pressure the defense. So now we have learned Ronald Jones is out on third down. What do you think of that?
Steve, I think it goes beyond that. I'm going to stick with what Arian said in Indianapolis, right in front of you and Mr. Lee DeCamper. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what Arian said a month ago was, I want a three-down back. He didn't say a third-down back. He said, I want a three-down back, somebody that he doesn't have to take off the field. And I think that is the most compelling thing as far as the Bucs in a running back situation. To me,
Ronald Jones is squarely back to the number two spot. This time he's not going to be behind Peyton Barber, but he's going to be behind, who's behind door number three, which is going to be a rookie back. And if the Bucs don't take a running back in the first 2 days of the draft, I will be absolutely shocked.
Interesting, Ira. So the Bucs and Arians are going to break down, huh? By the way, Ira, I have to apologize about the last podcast. I was way out of line, and I shouldn't have barked at you the way I did. That was very lame of me, very unprofessional. I think the world of you, you know that. So I just want to apologize for all your listening audience that I was out of line. I'll be the first to admit it.
Well, Lee, the way we say it in Brooklyn, which my Brooklyn roots is, forget about it, DeKemper, forget about it.
I saw an old video of you on YouTube. It was Javier, of all people, I think, that dug it up. And it was you being interviewed by J.P. Peterson after the Bucks beat the Eagles in the NFC Championship, and you used the word harvest about the trade bait that the Bucks made for Gruden and sent that trade, as you referred it, harvest to Al Davis.
You know, that's very eerie that you said that, because I believe it was yesterday or the day before that I saw that video on YouTube. I don't remember it ever being on YouTube before that. And I saw it, and it was taking place while we were waiting for the locker room door to open at the Vet after the Bucks played what I think is the greatest game they've ever played in franchise history.
Wow.
And yes, I think it was even more impressive than the Super Bowl when you consider the circumstances and the opponent. And that door didn't open, Leaf, for 45 minutes. It was freezing. It was 8 degrees. And then Keyshawn Johnson was the first guy out of the locker room. He looked at me, and he says, come on in, Kaufman. They're waiting for you. And when I walked in, there was Sapp, Brooks, and Barber, the unholy trio, with Lynch right behind them saying, nice job picking the Eagles, Kaufman. Nice job. Nice job. So, they never forget these things, Lee. They never forget them. And I wrote a story the other day saying, you know, let's not put the Bucks in the Super Bowl. And Buck fans are killing me for, why not shoot for the moon? I didn't say it's not a worthy goal, Steve, but I don't know how realistic it is.
I'm sure we'll get to that in a second, but the running back is interesting, because Arians always, you know, talked about, well, that's too high of a price to pay for a running back. And so you're thinking he's changing his tune a little bit.
Well, guess who's changing his tune for him? Mr. Thomas Brady. And I'm not saying I'm not saying Brady's going to get to be able to pick who the running back is, or Brady's going to be in the draft room whenever they do this draft. But I think having Brady is another compelling factor to put a priority on a back, and particularly one who can catch the ball out of the backfield, Steve.
Well, I agree with you, and I hope Brady is in the draft room, and I hope he's looked at the film and said, who else we got? Because we just don't got what we need right now. But I got to say, Ira, that interview reminded me of one of your classic interview stories. You probably don't even realize it, but Lee and I remember it well. You were at Bucks training camp, I want to say maybe 5-6 years ago, and you were doing some interviews on the side of training camp, one on television, and there you were sporting your fancy 70s porn star mustache, and you were on television. So we took a couple of pictures of you. I believe it was Lee. And we used those pictures on JoeBucksFan.com. All of a sudden, Kaufman's complaining, don't use that picture. I don't like it. Meanwhile, you're on television. Thousands of people are watching you. Classic Iron.
That was not exactly a grand experiment, Lee. That was not a grand experiment.
Oh, I remember you confronted me in the Raymond James press box. The only thing I remember you saying, and you were not happy, like, that picture, and you're pointing right at me.
Well, I had a couple of creditors after me at the time. I figure I changed my look a little bit. But it was not a good look for the sage, and, I'm back to being clean-shaven, gentlemen, and that's the way it's going to be for the near future.
Well, Ira, with this all-in mentality of the Bucks, and we listened to Arians today, who actually talked about the Super Bowl. He talked about making the Super Bowl, and
yeah,
I thought this was fantastic the way he sort of brushed it off. I'll read the quote quickly. He said, at the last meeting, He says, quote, "The last meeting we had as a football team, you know, I think every single player in the room believed they should have been in the playoffs. And the major factor was our turnover ratio. We didn't get enough turnovers and we turned it over way too many times. And if we corrected that, talent would not be the issue. I don't think talent will be the issue whether we make the playoffs or not. Now, the Super Bowl, there's some luck that comes with that, staying healthy and other things, but talent will not be an issue to keep us out of the playoffs." He's basically saying, hey, to get to the Super Bowl, you need a little luck, but we're plenty talented. We're a Super Bowl team. What do you make of that?
Well, I have a hard time arguing with this point. If you get in the playoffs and there's absolutely no reason, zero, barring a catastrophic injury to Tom Brady, that the Bucs should not be in the NFC playoffs. There's 7 slots and 16 teams this year. Let's remember that. I'm not saying they got to overtake the Saints in the NFC South. By the way, gentlemen, let it be noted, the Saints won the division by 6 games. 6 freaking games.
Wow.
Let's remember that. So, you know, adding Tom Brady helps. But my point is, I think what Arians is saying is, I'll take my chances in the postseason with Tom Brady. And I can't argue with him at that point. You know, you might have to go in a wild card. You might have to win on the road. So be it. Are you going to bet against Tom Brady in January? History tells us that's a very dangerous bet, guys.
6 games.
6 games.
Now,
wow.
Regarding that running back, guys, I wrote something on JoeBucksFan.com earlier today. I really believe that the mindset of the organization is so all in. It's just so obvious that it's all about right now and the hell with anything else. It just would. I know we touched on it last time, but even after hearing Arians today, I just think that there's a very good chance, a reasonable chance, that they will draft a running back in the first round, just to say why the hell not.
I'm not surprised that you feel that way, Steve. It wouldn't shock me, but I'll tell you what. Any running back they take at number 14, Lee, he better have a history and a tape of showing soft hands and a guy who can catch. And I think maybe for Tom Brady, that might be just as important as how many yards the guy averages per carry. Because Brady made a living off throwing a white on 3rd and 6 and keeping those chains moving, and nobody could stop that little flare pass coming out of the backfield, and Brady throws it well. He leads the guy. He doesn't throw behind him. And that's the key to that play is you got to throw it in stride. So the guy's going forward and can make one move and make some damage. So, Steve, at 14, well, Lee was speculating that he doesn't think it's crazy to draft a quarterback at 14. I think if the right guy slips at 14, I think Jason Light needs to step in and say, I think we should take the quarterback. I do.
Well, let's give Steve his props. He's the one to ask Arians that. And I was very surprised when Arians didn't deny it. And he basically said, if I remember correctly, the exact quote was, if the right guy's there, sure.
That's right. And who's going to pick the right guy, Steve, in that regard? Bruce Arians. It's going to be Bruce Arians who evaluates the quarterback position. Nobody else. It's going to be Bruce Arians to decide whether there's a quarterback worth taking at 14.
Now, Arians said something today to the effect of he and Tom Moore enjoy a pencil and a piece of paper and a VCR to watch film, and Tom Brady is the same kind of guy. So, but they're going to get him a computer as if he doesn't have one, and he's going to study film and all that. You know, I think, maybe I'm wrong, Ira. Maybe I'm wrong. And we know that Bruce Arians doesn't seem to care about tampering, but the way he talked, he was basically saying, we're going to get Brady the playbook and a computer right away. He can start watching. I don't think coaches are allowed to communicate with players until they actually report back. Am I wrong on that?
Look, he already broke the protocol in Indy when he said, door number 2, I want Tom Brady. I mean, you know, the guy, that's what we love about him, his candidness, his forthrightness. From the local media perspective, it's gold, Jerry, gold. But, you know, Bruce Arians, Lee, we've been around him long enough, 1 year plus, to know that he doesn't always, whether he's cognizant of NFL protocol or respects NFL protocol, sometimes those barriers fall when Arians has a microphone in front of his face. And by the way, I want to add this. Lee, I want to add this, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but, you know, looking at it from a coach perspective, a head coach perspective, Arians needs to go out and buy some lottery tickets. I mean, Lee, the guy's got everything he wants up to now. He wanted the front seven back on defense, and I think he said today he wanted that more than he wanted the quarterback. I think he said that.
He did.
And, yeah, that surprised me a little bit. Well, anyway, he got it with the addition of Sue signing. And, you know, he got Brady behind door number two, which he thought was a long shot when this process began. Lee, this guy's getting everything he wants. Look, I know Breshad Perriman, is off the market, but let's not quibble here. Bruce Arians has had one sensational last 10 days, hasn't he?
Yeah, I was going. You know, you guys were talking about him being outspoken. I said, "Wait a minute, we're talking about the same coach who threw a challenge flag, knowing full well he couldn't challenge a specific play. He just wanted to have a reason to chew on the referees."
That's a good example, Lee. That's a good example.
That's crazy.
Steve, this has been a windfall for Bruce Arians this past week.
Well, honestly, you could argue so much of his career has been a windfall if you just look at the list of quarterbacks he's gotten to work with. It's not like he's been the general manager. So, you know, a lot of things have fallen his way, and now this is the ultimate prize at the end of his career. Because you know how this goes, Ira. If Arians wins the Super Bowl, good chance he's in the Hall of Fame. That's just how it's going to be. So
absolutely. And Steve, I don't want to be a broken record, but, you know, your quarterback's going to be 43 whenever this season starts. He's not going to be 42. He's going to be 43. Because he turns 43 in August. All right, so he's 43. He's pushing the envelope. You know, he's got an arm left. You know, he's the winningest coach, winningest quarterback of all time. I'm not arguing that. But, Steve, you got to have a number two that you can rely on because, you know, you don't recover from injuries like you did when you were 27. And if the guy's out a month, I don't want the Bucs going 1-3. I'm sorry. I think it's a factor going forward.
Did either of you get any other insight into the draft today? Arians seemed very content with right tackle. He said he doesn't seem to think it's a need. He mentioned a bunch of guys at the bottom of the roster that you never hear of, in addition to the new addition, Haig. He also said quarterback wasn't a pressing need, he said, but he was open to drafting one. Any other vibes, Ira, on the draft that you gleaned from today?
I'm not buying the vibe on right tackle, Steve. I'm not buying it. I think there's four standouts that, weigh in above all others in terms of offensive tackle prospects. And I think if one of those four falls to the Bucs at 14, I think they're going to pull the trigger and use Haig, I think, smartly as a versatile backup to plug in. I mean, you can't expect – I've stunned Lee with this, but in the past 2-3 years, the Bucs have been incredibly lucky in terms of health on the offensive line. I mean, incredibly lucky. Donovan Smith, you know, his durability is beyond question. Marpet hasn't suffered any major injuries. Dotson, very few. They've had a lot of stability, not success, but stability. And to expect that to happen every year, I think that's a long shot. So, you know, maybe you bring Dotson back as a swing backup. You got Haig, who can play guard. And all of a sudden, you got some depth on the O-line. And Steve, I don't think it would be surprising to take a tackle at 14. I'm not buying what Arians was selling today.
It smelled like a bluff.
I mean, he's not going to take a quarterback. He's not going to take a right tackle. He's probably going to take a running back. Well, Steve, he ain't taking a wide receiver at 14 or a tight end. I can tell you that.
Well, he did say he was taking a running back. He basically just flat out said it. But I know what you're saying. Lee, your thoughts on the draft, of draft vibes from today?
Well, to the right tackle, you know, I like I just said, it smelled like a bluff. But you notice he indirectly referenced Jameis as our quarterback, you know, our quarterback last year. And when Arians rattled off all those offensive linemen by name, everyone, even the guys we never heard of before, like this Fabiano, it sounds like a guy that sells pizza by the slice or something. And he never mentioned Dotson's name. Never once. Not even
right.
Like we might bring him back or no. He never mentioned him.
I'm glad you brought that up. And before we hit on a couple other things, I want to remind everybody, BillCurryFord.com. That is where you start shopping for these incredible deals prompted by the coronavirus pandemic. Ford is really taking care of customers right now. As always, so is Sean Sullivan, the general manager, BillCurryFord.com. He will help you personally. Now, Ira, Rashad Perriman, gone. Now a member of the New York Jets for $6 million. He can make up to $8 million with bonuses. Peyton Barber, he will be behind Darius Geis and Adrian Peterson with the Redskins and Ron Rivera. Your thoughts?
You know, some Buck fans are wringing their hands about this third wide receiver situation. I'll say this. When that's your biggest worry, who are you going to get behind Godwin and Evans? We got to have somebody. I can't rely on Scotty Miller. When that's your situation, you got a pretty damn good football team when you're worried about who your third wide receiver is. Look, they can draft somebody. They're not going to draft a wide receiver in the first round. They can draft somebody. A veteran's going to get cut, you know, either in late August or before that. That's viable. So let's not go crazy about a third receiver. I mean, they got the best tandem in football. So, you know, let's not cry too much about the Rashard Perriman. People wanted him booted off this team until the final 6 weeks of last season. And no, Adam Humphries is not going to get cut loose by the Titans. He played well when he wasn't hurt last year, and they missed him in the postseason. So he's not going anywhere. So, you know, as far as the wide receiver situation, Steve, it's going to resolve itself. I don't think it's a big deal. And I'm going to reiterate what I said a few days ago. You know, Arians was asked about O.J. Howard, and I'm sticking to my guns. Cameron Brate will outplay O.J. Howard in 2020. I'm sticking with it.
Wow. I have an update I'm just seeing on Twitter here. Ivor, it looks like we're going to see if Big Storm Brewing has dog shirts, because a gentleman looks like he's going to order takeout from Big Storm Brewing because of Cosmo.
I like it. I like it. and once you try it, you'll be back many, many times, just like if you go into Bill Curry Ford showroom. You will be back many, many times. All it takes is one time to try it, and you'll be very pleased.
So, Ira, you called Ali Marpet this morning. You said, hey, young man, pick up the damn phone. And how did that go? What did you get from him? Little Jameis talk. What other vibes did you get from him?
Well, it was the third time I've tried him. The first time, he texted me. He didn't answer, but he left me a voicemail saying he would be glad to talk to me once everything's official. And I think by that he meant the Brady situation. And even though Winston hasn't landed with another team, he did answer the phone this third time I called him. He was a little subdued. You know, I think he's beaten up by being under house arrest. That's not Marpet. First thing I asked him was, you know, his family's from New York. And he's got a heck of a family. And his father's unbelievable, vibrant, passionate guy. Loves Joe Buck's fan. Another reason to sign off on Marpet's father. But I asked him about his family. He says they're all down here in St. Petersburg. So they're all hunkering down. You know, it didn't take much to get him to talk about Tom Brady. I can tell you that. But he's a big Jameis guy. And he wanted to talk about Winston. I'm sure he's been texting with Winston. I mean, Lee, they came in the same draft class. That forms a bond right then and there with Donovan Smith, Marpet, and Winston. I mean, the lads from 2015, they experienced a lot of losing, Lee. I mean, a lot of losing. 32 and 48. That is not what that trio expected when they arrived at One Buck Place in the spring of 2015. And, you know, Marpet is fervently hoping Winston gets another chance. And speaking of chances, guys, didn't Arians tell Rich Eisen that he made a couple of calls on Winston's behalf? Lee, am I correct on that? I think I am. And he didn't mention the teams. He kept that to himself. But I got to think one of the two teams was Pittsburgh. Lee, I don't think that's a stretch.
Is he still on good terms with Pittsburgh?
I think he has to be. He knows people there. Now, I'm not saying he called Roethlisberger. But Pittsburgh makes some sense, and I'm not sure Pittsburgh's got any interest in Winston at this point. But Marpet and Winston are very close. They're very tight, and he's one of Winston's big supporters, as was DeMar Dotson, Lee. You've been around Dotson many times when he never turned his back on Winston. Absolutely never, even though you saw him a couple of times on the sideline saying, what the heck, what the heck? But, you know, ultimately, he's a Winston supporter, and so is Marpet.
So, Ira, what you're saying is Marpet knows that Jameis led the NFL in passing. Is that what you're saying?
We're not going to get into that, Isbits. Don't even go there. I can see Lee's blood boiling on the other side of this telephone. But, you know, I think one thing Marpet's going to love, gentlemen, is the fact that I don't know anybody that gets the ball out faster than Brady. And now at the age of 43, when the Bucs start playing in 2020, I think that's more important than ever in terms of keeping Brady upright and not getting him too many hits. It's not always the sacks, it's the hits on a 43-year-old that you got to look out for. Brady's not going to out-sprint anybody. We're not talking about Lamar Jackson or Russell Wilson here or Mahomes. And in that respect, I think the fact that Brady gets that ball out so quickly, I think that's going to be one of the most interesting things is the Arians' philosophy over the years. My quarterback's got to stand in there and take the hit and deliver that ball downfield. I'm very curious to see how that melds with Brady's strengths as a quarterback.
Lee, what did you think of Arians saying that he's called a couple of teams on his own to basically sell Jameis and tell them what a great worker he is and all that? What do you make of that?
Well, it seems like he's he's known Jameis since Jameis was a kid. And I think, was at the combine, he said, you can't make decisions with your heart or you'll get fired. So I think he feels bad for Jameis. But, if I'm Kevin Colbert with the Steelers, for example, and Arians calls me up and he's like, hey, I want to vouch for Jameis. I'm like, okay, you're telling me all these good things about him. Why the hell didn't you keep him? You know, yeah. So it comes across as kind of, although I'm sure Arians was trying to be sincere, if you're on the receiving end of that phone call, it smells insincere. It's like, well, wait a minute, this makes no sense. You're talking the guy up to me, but you had a chance to keep him. So what are you trying to pawn off on me here?
Steve, I think one of the problems with that phone call, and I think he was sincere, you know, they made a decision to let Winston test free agency. And once you do that, you know, you have to do that with the belief that he's going to be picked up possibly very quickly. You don't know for sure that he's not. You didn't know Winston was going to be in this position a week later. And you do that before you know you got Brady nailed down. You made that decision before Brady's standing behind door number two. You didn't know that at the time when the new NFL calendar flipped over. And so that's a tough question, you know, for Arians to answer from the executives of these other teams that he's calling.
You know, I just thought it was weak in some ways. I mean, I get it, but Arians legitimately, and I'm not saying that he wasn't being honest, but he legitimately spent the last 2 months throwing Jameis under the bus publicly, like most coaches don't do. And now he's going to pick up the phone and say, hey, this guy is your guy. Rich Eisen asked him, he followed up with a question to Arians to ask if he was pitching Jameis as a starter, and Arians said no, as a backup.
I'm going to disagree with you on that, Steve. I don't think he threw Winston under the bus for the last 2 months. I think I think his tone didn't change, Lee, until the last two games. And we all remarked about it, how he didn't make any excuses for Winston after the Houston and Atlanta games. So, Lee, I don't think that's accurate to say that Arians was beating up on Winston publicly in the last 2 months, Lee. Am I wrong?
He wasn't defending him, that's for sure. He certainly wasn't, he didn't give anybody any impression that he was going to keep him. That's certainly for sure. There's no doubt the last two games sunk Jameis, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are like, what are you talking about Jameis before? He's not on the roster anymore. That's a fair point, but when a number one overall pick vanishes and doesn't get a second contract, I think it's worth noting. I don't know why Jameis isn't a backup unless, you know, we're guessing here because we're not in we're not privy to phone calls or any kind of board meetings. But I had heard through the grapevine the Bucs didn't exactly close the door on Jameis after the season, but they were looking, as Arians said many times. But what got the Bucs to look a little harder than they planned to look outside of one Buc place for a quarterback? Jameis's contract demands were ridiculous. I'll just put it like that. And they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. You ended the season like this, and you won how much? We'll get back to you. And that kind of fueled the pursuit of Brady more than anything.
Steve, how would you characterize the Winston era, ERA, not E-R-R-O-R? Steve, in terms of, you know, the first overall pick in the 2015 draft, he doesn't get signed to a second contract. They only have one winning season. They never win more than 9 games. Would you say he was a bust, or would you say that the Bucs should not have drafted him? How do we look back at the Winston era?
Well, you could say they shouldn't have drafted him because there was no reason for anybody of sound mind and body, including Team Glazer, to bless going with Josh McCown as the number one quarterback in 2014. Everybody knew the guy was a career loser as a starter, and yet they anointed him as the starter in March. It was insane, so it all never should have happened. But given that it did happen, of course he was a bust. The number one overall pick, he's got no job, and they didn't win. So, yeah, he's a bust. Mariota was a bust, same way. It's just the way it goes. So, yeah, as of now, Jameis is a straight bust. You could throw the blame all around. You could blame Jason Light for not getting him a running game. Obviously, Jameis gets his share of the blame. You could spread it all around. But it just didn't work. So, yeah, I got to give him an F.
That's a harsh four-letter word, Steve. Lee, bust? I don't agree with bust. No. A five-year starter is not a bust.
I'll call him a failure.
I'll call him a failure.
Call him a failure. I won't call him a bust. I can't. Guy that throws 5,000 yards in one season, no, I can't call that a bust. Busts don't do that. But failure, sure. As Steve pointed out, only one time did he have a running game. That was his rookie season. And right. They had umpteen different chances to correct that. They never did. Yeah, it was a failure. For whatever reason, it was a failure. Whether Cutter didn't get through to him or Arians gave up on him or whatever, it's a failure. Because the guy doesn't make a second contract, it's a failure. It's that simple.
And I think what's really hurting Jameis right now, because of his baggage in the past, he's the kind of guy that you don't want to sign until you sit down and really talk to him for a while, spend half a day with him, and he just can't do that in free agency right now. So anybody who didn't want him as a starter, I get that, but if they were thinking maybe we'll let him compete, maybe we'll want him as a backup, we don't know how much to pay him, he can't really sit down and talk to anybody, and yeah, I think that's hurting him right now.
I don't think it's far-fetched that Winston is going to end up having a successful second career somewhere. I'm not saying it's going to happen in 2020. He's going to be on a roster this fall. And I don't think it's crazy to think that he can have a renaissance in a different town, in different circumstances. I don't think that's far-fetched, but it's very disconcerting from the Winston camp to look around. Here we are 10 days into free agency, and he doesn't have a job. They never would have thought that. Never.
Steve hit the nail on the head, the baggage he has, because – we kind of overlooked this, but for whatever reason, let's say he goofs up again. And, you know, I hate to say that, but let's say he does goof up again. It's not a stretch of the imagination to suspect that may happen. He's looking at sitting out half a season. Who wants their backup quarterback or starting quarterback? Who wants to go through that, a half-season suspension?
That's a fair point, Steve. That's a fair point.
Brad Johnson was on CBS Sports Radio the other day, Ira. And I don't know if you read the story two or three times on JoeBucksFan.com. Probably not. But Brad Johnson said that Jameis was tough to watch at certain times. That's his quote. But he believes that his story is not over, referring to Jameis. And he made it clear, and of course Johnson has experience, he said quarterbacks often hit their prime at 29 years old. They reinvent themselves. And he doesn't think Jameis is done whatsoever. But ultimately, turnovers, in Johnson's mind, is the number one stat in football. And you know, he just has to fix that. But he thinks Jameis will be reinvented, which, you know, would be interesting to watch.
You know, Lee, I can see where a Brad Johnson would have his stomach turned by the way Jameis Winston plays football, particularly the way he did in 2019. I wouldn't call Johnson a game manager necessarily. You know, Captain Checkdown, no, because, you know, in the Bucs championship season, he was outstanding in the playoffs.
He made the Pro Bowl, right?
Yeah, and he made the Pro Bowl. That's right. He was outstanding. They had a very good offense down the stretch that season. Of course, it was a defense-heavy team, but, you know, Gruden did wonders with that offense. You know, Brad Johnson, I think, prided himself, Lee, on making smart decisions, not taking a sack, getting the ball out quickly, and throwing to the open man, which is Brady's credo already here in Tampa. Throw it to the guy who's open. And he spaced the ball around, and nobody complained that they weren't getting their touches. Even Keyshawn during 2002 seemed like a happy camper. You know, it's easy to be happy when you're winning. So, Lee, I can see where Brad Johnson didn't appreciate the way Winston was casual with the football last year.
Oddly enough, we're talking about Brad Johnson here. Oddly enough, Wednesday night on NFL Network, they had a rebroadcast of the Bucs Super Bowl win. You know, it's been, what, how many years, 13 years, something like that? I forgot how terrible of a first half Brad Johnson had. He was really pretty bad until the last drive of the first half with the Bucs. And then he played pretty good after that, but that first drive, and he didn't have any time to throw. He was getting badly.
Lee, did he throw an interception on the Bucs' first series?
His first pass, I think.
First pass, yeah, absolutely.
To Woodson.
Okay, to Woodson.
Who was playing injured, by the way, and he should have thrown a second pass interception to Woodson. Woodson dropped it. But he was terrible, and John Madden was remarking about how bad the Bucs' offense was, how terrible Johnson was playing, how really, really disgusting he looked when they ended the season with him on the bench with a bum bat, and Sean King and Rob Johnson had to come in, and they didn't do anything. And if I remember correctly, those little two games was a pathetic loss to the Steelers on Monday night, and then I think the defense outscored the offense against the Bears in Champaign on a Sunday.
It was 15-0. They kicked five field goals. They did.
And clinched the division, right?
And, you know, that's how powerful that 2002 Buck team was. They're ripping Brad Johnson a new one. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the Bucs were winning 20-3 at the half, killing them.
As much as Madden was talking about how terrible the Bucs offense was and how bad Brad Johnson was playing, he was equally effusive with his praise about Monty Kiffin and the entire defense, how well they tackled, how smart they are, in particular Rondé Barber, how Monty Kiffin stressed fundamentals in tackling, which is such a lost art these days. So as bad as Madden was tearing apart the offense, he was praising the defense.
Absolutely.
Sage, I call this the Jameis blame game. Not that everybody's blaming Jameis for everything, but there's a lot of a piling on effect, I believe, from a lot of people as to what happened last season. Understandably, the quarterback gets a lot of credit, a lot of blame, all that stuff. But Bruce Arians' son, Jake Arians, he has one son. He was a kicker, cup of coffee in the NFL, and he's on the Draft Network, works for them, does a podcast. And Jake Arians said that the Bucs will be running the ball better instantly because Brady will recognize defenses better, he'll check to runs that will be successful, and he went on and on to say that, hey, all Bucs fans think this should have been a 10 or 11 team last year, and take away 30 interceptions, take away fumbles, better play at the line of scrimmage, defense in its second year, Brady pulling the trigger. He made it sound like they're destined to win 13 games. But the running game... The running game part of this was interesting, Ira, because he was very adamant, and you know he's echoing his dad. He worships his dad. And Arians was asked about this today, and he said, well, Jameis did a good job on his checks, but we didn't ask him to do all these different checks. We used to have three or four different run checks for Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady will be able to do all that. So, I mean, is this getting overblown that now we're going to blame Jameis for the running game?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. DeKemper, but Jameis Winston cannot be faulted for crappy blocking. I'm not going to put that on Jameis Winston. And you know how I've been on this offensive line in terms of their run blocking. And that includes DeMar Dotson, who openly, even from the coach's standpoint, said, hey, the guy's a pretty good pass blocker and struggles in the run game. I'm tired of hearing about struggling in the run game, period, over the last 4 years. I'm not putting that on Winston. I'm sorry to disagree with Mr. Jake Arians. And by the way, Bruce said one thing I take issue with. Guys, didn't he say, talking about the turnovers, that we turned it over too much and we didn't take it away enough? Now, half that statement is correct. They led the league in giveaways, 41. That's a whopping total, much more than any other team. But Lee, the reason they weren't minus 25 in that category, and they were minus 13, is they took the ball away 28 times, which is a good number. It's not a bad number. And especially considering JPP missed half the season. So I'm not faulting the defense in terms of creating takeaways. I think they did a pretty good job in that regard, Lee.
What do you think of this? Now, I think you're on to something there, certainly, Ira. What do you think about this? You know, we're getting back to a little bit the Jake Arians philosophy, which is de facto the Bruce Arians philosophy. The guy that follows us on Twitter, diehard Bucks fan. I mean, this guy, he cannot consume enough Bucks information. Sort of like Sean Sullivan, the general manager of Bill Curry Ford. This guy cannot inhale enough Bucks information. I don't care if it's podcasts, I don't care if it's articles, you name it. And he put out on Twitter today, and I thought it was very interesting. I always jokingly, I write this often, and half of it's tongue-in-cheek, that Bucks fans always have to have one guy to tear apart. One guy. Every year, it's a different guy. But one guy's a target for the ire of Bucks fans. And this guy, Chris Bell, he put out on Twitter today, he said, first it was Gerald McCoy.
That's right.
Then it was Vernon Hargraves. Then it was Jameis. If this doesn't work out with Brady next year, who are you going to blame now? And I thought that was a heck of a point, and my first reaction was Donovan Smith. But I thought that was a heck of a point he made. Who are you going to target? Who are Bucks fans going to go after now? You got rid of McCoy. Now, he was a big target of Bucks fans. And then Hargraves, and I understand why. We get that. Now it was Jameis. So if the Bucks finish 7-9 again next year, who are they going to go after now?
You know, Lee, it's interesting you mentioned Donovan Smith in that regard, because, Steve, can you imagine the pressure on the offensive line as a group this year in particular with a 43-year-old quarterback who happens to be an icon, a first-ballot Hall of Famer, perhaps the best that's ever played the position? And, Steve, can you imagine a guy that misses a block potentially causing an injury to Tom Brady? Buck fans will never forgive that, Steve, never.
Well, it goes to another level too, Ira, because half the games are going to be on national television, practically. So the whole nation is going to see if we see some of the traditional Donovan Smith loafing, which was down last year, but it was still there. And even today, Arians strongly implied, I don't have the quote in front of me, that Tom Brady will get Donovan Smith, you know, playing harder. And
intense was the word.
Intense.
Yeah, intense. So
you know, he also said Donovan Smith had a good year last year. He did.
He did
say that.
So yeah. it all gets magnified, you know, tenfold. And like you have said many times, how will they manage that? Those expectations, the spotlight, the pressure. You know, I don't know how they're going to handle that. Yeah, Ira, look, the whole offensive line thing is going to be interesting. To me, though, the whole stuff from Jake Arians, you know, all of a sudden, he's sitting there saying the running game is going to be better because of Tom Brady. Well, then why did you get rid of Peyton Barber? Now you're saying Ronald Jones can't play on third down, and you need a better upgrade to the other guys. So it just seems like something's off. But, you know, I expect Tom Brady to be a bit of a miracle worker, but to the extent that the Bucks seem to think it, I don't know. It's hard for me to find the middle ground there.
I don't want to put too much on Brady's shoulders, guys. I mean, if the Bucks' running game's better, it's because they got a better running back carrying the ball, and a better right tackle. As Lovey used to say, Lee, simple as that.
Well, Steve brought up the offensive line, how, you know, they don't want to give up a sack on Brady that names them on national TV. And I thought that was very interesting, because earlier today, I was talking with Sean Sullivan, you know, the general manager at Bill Curry Ford, First Family of Ford, and he thought just by having Brady on the roster, the offensive line, all of them, not just Donovan Smith, who's a target of all kinds of Bucks fans. Every guy on that line is going to take it up a notch. And this is Sean saying this, not me. Sean said, because they don't want to get embarrassed on SportsCenter. They know Brady will be on SportsCenter every time he drops back. That's going to be on SportsCenter, and they don't want to embarrass themselves on SportsCenter. Thought that was very interesting.
There might be something to that, Steve, but if that's true, you know, then Jameis Winston has a legitimate beef. Why didn't you do it for me? You didn't mind if I got hurt? You didn't mind if I got sacked? So I understand, Lee, and it goes along to what Bruce Arians said in the last couple of days. Bruce Arians and Marpet mentioned this a lot, too, during our call. He didn't talk about the way Brady hits a receiver on time on, you know, a 15-yard out pattern. He didn't talk about the way Brady sheds block. Guys coming after him in the pocket, sidesteps him. They talk about leadership and how he's expected to elevate the play of everybody around him on the offense. I don't think his arrival is going to affect the way Shaq Barrett or JPP approaches their craft. But from his side of the ball, Steve, they're putting a lot of onus on the intangibles that Brady brings, and I think to a certain extent, I think that's going to be legit. I think there's going to be a new era of accountability, and I'm not saying that Arians and Leftwich let things slide. I'm not saying that, but when it comes from Brady, I think it's just going to mean more, and it's going to be a different atmosphere.
Ira, I got to ask you this, and I'm asking because I don't know. I legitimately don't know this. You talked to some Bucs players. I know that, because I don't want you to out anybody, but I'm just looking for some inside information here. Arians came out and said yesterday on Eisen's show, or on ESPN, they were looking for a leader. Well, if you're looking for a leader, that tells me you don't have one, and that tells me basically either Jameis' teammates had tuned him out, or they didn't respect him, or there was some disconnect there. What do you make of that?
Well, that could be part of it. Of course, you're comparing Winston to a guy that's led 45 game-winning drives and won three MVP awards and six Super Bowls. So, you know, if Winston falls a little short of Brady in that department, that's no shame on number three either. To say that Winston wasn't a leader, I'm not willing to go there. But Tom Brady's Tom Brady. And the reason that Arians wanted him, above all, was the level of accountability that Brady's going to bring to that locker room. Steve, it's going to be interesting for those of us that go in that locker room and whether we can pick up on a sense of heightened accountability, you know, from the center right down to the backup tight end. We shall see. But that's a big part of why he wanted Brady behind door number two, Steve.
Yeah, look, the goal is for him to raise the whole boat here, and I think it's overly optimistic to think he's going to make everybody better all of a sudden, but he will make a lot of players better, and it's going to be so key that they get a real big talent infusion in this draft, because you only have 2 years. It's a two-year window, and yeah, that is so tight. They have to go nuts here, Ira, but one last thing I wanted to run by you, but first I wanted to remind everybody, subscribe to the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play, other platforms. Great way to get an alert. And I know more people are listening to podcasts now than ever before because they have so much more time. There's no sports on TV, and we will continue to keep rolling on the podcast. Our thanks to Bill Curry Ford and Big Storm Beer. Get that Big Storm Beer. It, you know, we talk about the food, but it's all about the beer. Big Storm Florida Brewed right there in Clearwater. Click on the Storm Tracker at joebucksfan.com and you can find where the beer is. And of course, Bill Curry Ford, Sean Sullivan, we're going to have him back on the podcast soon to talk about the draft and some of the maybe possible change in focus with Tom Brady. Ira, Gerald McCoy, multi-year deal with the Cowboys. Your thoughts there?
Well, I don't want to be cruel, but I don't think the man's got much left, gentlemen. I just don't. I think he had a minimal impact on Carolina's defense, which wasn't very good last year. Not all on McCoy. I think McCoy's best years are past him. If the Cowboys are to succeed, I don't think McCoy's going to be a primetime player in that regard. Lee, he might be able to help on the fringes, Lee, but I just, I don't think he's the same player he was, you know, in 2013 or 2014. I think his play has dipped.
Is he strictly a passing down defensive tackle now?
I can see that. I can see that, you know, especially if Carolina focuses on the D-line in the draft.
Dallas
focuses more on the D-line than the draft. He's got some pieces around him, but what he doesn't have is Rod Marinelli. Marinelli's gone, and that's a blow, you know, for a defensive line in particular in Big D. You know, look, I'm happy McCoy's got another paycheck. He's always going to be a Buccaneer at heart. The three of us are going to go round and round because I do think McCoy will end up being in the Ring of Honor. I know DeKemper may take umbrage at that, but you can't sneeze at six Pro Bowls. You just can't. He and Levante David were the only reasons the Bucs remained competitive in any regard this decade. And by the way, Steve, talking about the podcast.
The Bucs were competitive this decade? I missed something.
Well, in any sense, not getting blown out every week. But, Steve, with Brady in town, there's absolutely no excuse for this podcast not to stay in the top 50. You hear that, Nancy Grace? I will fall on my sword, Stephen, if this podcast doesn't make your Google Play top 50 on a regular basis the rest of the year.
All right. I will say that McCoy said on Sirius XM NFL Radio that one reason he chose Dallas is because he's confident he'll be an every down guy there, and that was very important to him. So he wasn't happy in Carolina because they were rotating him. So it should be very interesting. And it is worth noting that Carolina led the NFL in sacks last year. And, you know, there was McCoy playing 16 games. So I don't know. It's interesting. It's fun to watch these ex-Bucks. Maybe Jameis will end up in Dallas. Who knows? I know Lee has speculated that could be the case for a long time.
I don't think any team in this league, Lee, has retrenched and turned the roster over more than the Carolina Panthers right now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right, Ira, wash your hands for a change. Stay away from people, and we'll talk to you soon.
Keep those Big Storm Brewery lunches coming, Stephen.
All right, this is Bruce Arians' conference call with the local media on Wednesday. You won't hear it anywhere else. Here you go.
Tom had mentioned about, you know, how he was looking forward to catching up to speed on everything, the playbook, meeting his teammates, everything like that. But, I mean, given everything that's going on right now and all the restrictions that there are in place, is there stuff that you guys can do to kind of help him? And what would be some of those things that you guys can do to kind of help him get up to speed, knowing the uncertainty that kind of faces everything, you know, the next few weeks, months, et cetera?
We'll get him a computer. Okay, we'll get him his computer with all the stuff in it. But he's kind of like me and Tom Moore. His computer is a playbook and a pencil. So we'll get the paper to him. He can start, you know, getting the verbiage and all that stuff down. We've got some video conferencing that we're looking into. It's amazing what technology you can do today. Just like with the draft right now, being able to interview players FaceTime wise and other things that you can utilize technically to get what you need to get done to get your work done.
Thanks so much for doing this, Coach.
Oh, you bet.
We've heard some rumblings about you taking a collaborative approach with Brady. If so, how can you take some of the things that he ran so successfully in New England to adapt to what you do in your scheme?
Well, I think that's one thing that drew us both together is, you know, I've always collaborated with my quarterbacks, whether it be putting a playbook together with Ben, starting with Andrew from scratch, just finding out the likes and dislikes of a quarterback and, we've watched all their film and, they're so similar in a lot of ways to what we do. It's just how you call it. Obviously the people are going to be doing the jobs differently. And that's the hardest part. You know, Julian Edelman runs certain routes and Chris Godwin's run certain routes and they're very similar, but they're different people. That part is going to be the harder part, getting them together and letting them throw. And as soon as it's safe to do all that, I'm sure they're going to do it on their own. But for me, it's getting to know him. It's obviously going to be a different time table this year because, you know, we usually start at April 22nd. But sooner or later, we'll be working together and game plans and things like that. Playbooks are huge in the spring. Playbooks are huge in training camp. Then you start taking things out of it for game plans and working together on a team. That's the most fun, and I look forward to doing that with him.
Hey, Coach, we know what Tom means on the field, X's and O's, but in terms of this signing, what type of message does this send to the rest of the NFL and fans about where this franchise is going compared to the last 10-plus years?
Yeah, I think it speaks volumes. You know, arguably the best player to ever play the game is available. Our ownership was totally in agreement. Let's go get him. And Jason got it done. Everybody this time of year, you're trying to do the best thing you can for your football team to get better for next year. For us, my priority was the defense and then quarterback. Right now, we've got just about the whole defense back, and we've changed quarterbacks. And I think getting the best quarterback to ever play the game, I think it sends a good message.
Coach, you know, free agency is kind of, you know, the first wave is kind of gone, and now that, you know, you guys have been able to retain so many of your key players, looking forward in the draft and kind of what's left, what do you look at when you look at this roster and say, here are the places we still need to add a few things to take this team to the next level?
Yeah, I think with free agency, it's going to be tough because of guys who need physicals. To go any further, you need to get a physical on them. They'd love to have a pass-catching back. You know, obviously, there's more depth in the secondary. So there are little pieces of the puzzle. I think the draft is going to be huge for us. Obviously, we have a lot of time, extra time to spend on it. It's going to be more fun doing it different ways. I always like change. I think change is great sometimes. So I don't think any general managers are really fired up about having a draft this way, but I'm kind of excited about it.
Obviously, Tom's been a durable guy for a long time, but obviously, pass protection becomes all the more important with a 42-year-old quarterback. Just want to ask you how you feel about the offensive line and whether there's a need to upgrade it all beyond what you might do with right tackle in the draft.
I don't think so. You know, when you look back at the grades last year, I think I don't put a lot of stock in what other people grade our guys, but they were graded pretty high. I thought Donovan got a lot better. I think he'll even get more intense with Tom back there at quarterback than he has been, but he played extremely well last year. I thought he made the most improvement of the things we asked him to do than anybody up front. Allie's solid. Ryan had a heck of a year. Kappa had, a fantastic year for a young guy. Played with a broken arm and got better and better. Joe Haig is a solid right tackle. We'll see what happens in the draft. I think we need some depth. We do have some really young guys I like. Seton, Stinney, some of those guys that practiced all year, Fabiano. So I really like what those guys bring as depth. So I don't see it as a glaring need, but you're always looking to upgrade somewhere.
Coach, you mentioned pass catching running back. How more vital or how much more vital does that become when you have a guy like Brady?
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing, our backs did a very good job in the screen game last year. That was one really, especially Rojo. I thought he really excelled for the first time in the screen game. Dari was pretty solid. But just using backs out of the backfield as wide receivers, as primary receivers, that's not Rojo's deal. But I'm looking to, hopefully we can find somebody like that can compete with Dari on third down and become more of a wide receiver threat.
Hey, Coach. Yeah. I think the perception is that your offense pushes the ball downfield a lot more than some other teams, and that Brady throws underneath a bit more than other teams do. Is that sort of the collaboration that you were talking about, that there's going to have to be sort of a meet in between the two of you on that, or is that perception just wrong?
I think the perception is just wrong. I thought his deep ball was outstanding last year. You know, through their play action game, they hit a lot of deep balls. And our quarterback, I thought he put it as good as anybody. He throws the guy that's open. You know, we do have reads that start deep and come to short. I've had a couple of quarterbacks that, well, they just keep looking deep. They won't throw the check down. And Tom Moore has the best saying in the world, you never go broke putting money in the bank, take the damn check down. So, yeah, I mean, that, I think we don't have to teach Tom that. But I think the freedom of looking downfield on certain routes in certain situations, when the matchup's perfect, take it. Don't be afraid to take it. Some quarterbacks are afraid to take it. I'm not looking for a check down Charlie type quarterback.
I just wanted to ask you about what Tom Brady could do for a young player like O.J. Howard at the tight end position, given his connections all those years with Gronk and how he used the tight end vertically, and whether it be deep or intermediate, and how O.J.'s career could be benefited by Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think anytime you have a quarterback come in who has thrown a bunch of touchdowns to tight ends, your eyes light up. His eyes should light up. You know, it's still going out on the practice field and earning that trust. So I think that would be his number one focus. And you got a quarterback that throws the tight end, go earn it and get balls thrown to you.
Hi, Bruce. So much is made of Tom's age, kind of in the twilight of his career here. When you watched Tom last year, what differences do you see in this game?
I don't see much. I think he moves in the pocket as well as he ever has, sliding around. He's always been great at that. He and Peyton were never fast. They never scrambled, but they were hard to sack because they had great pocket awareness. And he's quick with the trigger. I mean, he can move his feet and still be very accurate. You know, so, yeah, there's age. I mean, we're all getting older. But I don't see a huge drop-off in any phase of his game, whether it's deep outside, deep down the field, or his accuracy underneath. But I think, if anything, he's as mobile inside the pocket as he's ever been.
Coach, with you and Tom Brady and Tom Moore and the rest of the offensive staff, is this the ideal time to make a big draft investment in a quarterback? And are you scouting and ranking all the quarterbacks like you used to do each year?
Yeah, I do things I love to do just for fun. And that's a nice class. I don't think it's as good as some classes I've seen, but it's a pretty nice class. No, I don't. I think if the guy is there, that he fits what we want at the right price, then I'd say yes. You know, you're always looking for a guy that you think is the future. Whether he's in this draft, next draft, I don't think it's a dire need this year, no. But if the right guy's there, yes.
Every team's in the same boat here, but given the climate we're in and a little bit of uncertainty, you mentioned OTAs and then that for playbook reasons, but how important are reps on the practice field? You know, when you bring in a new quarterback, no matter who it is, how important are reps with receivers and for things like timing and building that trust that you mentioned?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, whether it's, you know, on the practice field or in a college stadium or wherever they go, all the guys usually get together anyway. So it's going to be more of an importance when everything is cleared and they can travel to get together before, you know, we start. And I think Tom wants to get a real good handle on the offense and get his family settled and then reach out and see if guys can meet somewhere and start throwing and get to know each other a little bit better and building that rapport.
This may seem obvious, but when you bring in a 43-year-old quarterback, are you basically saying this team is capable of winning the Super Bowl right this moment, going from 7-9 to the ultimate game?
I think so. I mean, when we last meeting we had as a football team, you know, I think every single player in the room believe they should have been in the playoffs. And the major factor was our turnover ratio. We didn't get enough turnovers and we turned it over way too many times. And if we corrected that, talent would not be the issue. I don't think talent will be the issue, whether we make the playoffs or not. Now, the Super Bowl, there's some luck that comes with that, but you know, staying healthy and some other things, but talent will not be an issue to keep us out of the playoffs, no.
Hey, Coach, there was some talk that when you bring in somebody like Tom Brady, you might have more guys across the league reaching out, interested in coming here to Tampa, chasing a ring with Tom. Have you encountered that, or are you seeing a greater volume of talent in play to fill some of the depth positions and role plays around the roster?
Yeah, we had some guys call, but there's only so much money that can go around. And, you know, we've gone to get our defense fixed, and we've had some other conversations with some guys, and, you know, we'll see what's left in the cash box and be careful on who we bring in. And, you know, we're always searching. So, yeah, we've had some guys call and say they would play for this, but we didn't have that much money. So it was a little bit less, but it was a hell of a lot less.
Hey, Coach, how surprised are you that the only thing Brady asked of you guys was for his new teammates' phone numbers, and what kind of feedback, if any, are you getting from players regarding Brady's call to them?
Yeah, it didn't surprise me at all. That's the type of guy he was, you know, and is. So it's just a matter of just getting to know his teammates. I think that's the most important thing to him. You know, the number thing, he'll take care of that. And I think he's already done it. He and Chris have already talked, I believe. And, I'm that's one of the things I hate, because we had like 26 guys in the building working out last week, and now all of a sudden everything shut down. And there was a great buzz in the building working out with all our guys. I saw Levante and a couple of guys, but now not being able to see them and get the reactions is tough.
Bruce, with Jameis being in his fifth season last year and Tom entering season number 21 for him, is one of the advantages that Tom brings is just the knowledge and experience to check to the right play at the line of scrimmage, because he's pretty much seen it all. How much of an advantage do you see that being for your offense in 2020?
Yeah, I think Jameis did a good job with our run game checks last year. There was no shortcomings there. I think Tom, with his experience, obviously we can do a lot more of it, a la Peyton when we were in Indy, doing some 3 and 4 play checks at the line of scrimmage, because he can handle that. We didn't put that on Jameis. We just wanted him to just play. We did run a lot of run checks, and he was pretty good at it, and it should help our running game.
Coach, this defense, you know, being able to keep it together, the fact that you guys relied on so many young guys last year, and the fact that now you will have so much of that defense returning, and Todd at the top of that, especially given the landscape of the world now and all the restrictions, how important is it going to be whenever next season starts to have on the defensive side of the ball so much continuity from the top down?
Yeah, I think that was the number one goal for me, you know, coming out of last season, is to continue to build on defense. And the only way to build is to keep everybody in place and grow. It's huge. I think, yeah, they'll be so far ahead of our offense if and when we get back out on the field. But I think our offense will catch up pretty fast. And, but yeah, the defensively, we did some really nice things last year, and we got better and better, especially those last 6 weeks of the season. I really liked the way we played against Houston, who was a playoff caliber team. I thought our defense played well enough, more than well enough to win that game.
Hey, you mentioned, you know, you had 26 guys in there a couple weeks ago or a week ago. You know, with these guys, you know, the gyms are shut down. I mean, you know, lifting is such a big part of what they do in the off season. What are guys doing? I mean, are you helping them out as an organization, trying to get them equipment, or just what is that? How much of a problem is that?
Yeah, it's a huge problem. You know, Anthony Paroli, you know, he handles each guy individually. So each guy has a workout routine for them. Now it's finding a spot to do it. Not everybody has a gym in their home, you know. So it's probably the hardest thing right now is for guys to stay in lifting shape, especially and conditioning shape for this time of year, because this is a build up time for OTAs, and we always like to build in March to get ready for April. It's hard on them. Reaching out to some of the guys, you know, one or two guys do have gyms in their homes or stuff available to work out with, and they'll share it.